From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Russia assumed the rotating presidency of the UN Security Council for the month of September. September is the month that the General Assembly is hosted in New York City, with the heads of state of most of the member countries attending. Russia's representative to the UN, Vasily Nebenzia, held a press conference in New York Tuesday. And we bring you excerpts of that here.
Pamela.
Thank you, Peter, and thank you, Ambassador Nebenzia, for the briefing, and we're looking forward to a busy month. My question is about the proposal that you put forward in July for the Persian Gulf Security and Cooperation Initiative. You proposed the U.S., Russia, China, EU, India, and other stakeholders. Have you gotten any response to that from any of those parties? And what is your view of the U.S. version of a cooperation initiative in the Gulf? One other little technical question on the program of work. Will Foreign Minister Lavrov be presiding at both of the two Security Council meetings during UNGA? And can you give an explanation of why your President Putin will not be attending UNGA when Russia is the Security Council President? Thank you.
Let me start with the last two questions. I count on Minister Lavrov's presiding over both meetings of the Security Council during the high-level week. On President Putin, I do not command his schedule. His participation in the General Assembly was not planned. We learned it some time ago, and I don't see anything extraordinary in this. I hope next year will be different. Next year will be marking the 75th anniversary of the United Nations. But I will not prejudge anything at this point. But indeed, President Putin is not coming for the high level.
Just as a follow-up, President Medvedev did come and presided at a Security Council meeting. Russia isn't always the president.
President Putin also came and
presided. Yes, and President Putin also came. But this one is not extra.
When he comes, I hope he will. That will be during the high-level week. I'm not sure that he'll be presiding at the Security Council meeting because it won't be our turn next year. But at least I hope there will be an opportunity for him to participate in the Security Council meeting if the topic of the meeting is relevant and the schedule permits. On our initiative on regional cooperation and security in the Gulf, indeed the concept was presented both in Moscow and here in New York. We distributed this paper as a document of the Security Council and I think of the General Assembly. We received interested responses from countries of the region and outside. We discussed informally this issue with our colleagues in the Security Council. We never had a meeting on that issue, but I think that we've been saying long time every statement we had on the Middle East or the Gulf in the Council that there is no way escaping some way or another of a collective security format in the Gulf and in the region, in the wider region. And we will come to that sooner or later, sooner rather than later, hopefully, but we are not there yet. We are not expecting that mechanism to start overnight, but this is food for thought, which is deserving serious consideration, and I think it is being considered seriously by many players in the Gulf and outside of the Gulf. What concerns the U.S. reaction, I do not recall any official one on that issue. I may speculate that they may not wholeheartedly accept it from scratch, But I remember, for example, how we were, we together with China, we were promoting this idea of double suspension in Northwest Asia, in Northeast Asia on the DPRK. And initially that idea was vehemently rejected by some of our partners, US included, but now what is happening de facto, they are using the concept that we proposed some time ago. So hopefully we would be pleased if they will hijack our concept of regional security in the Gulf and present it as their own and will work on it and will ride on it. I think that will be a good thing. But we should be careful. We should be patient, and I think time will take its toll.
James.
Ambassador, you've already mentioned that you have the meeting on the 10th on Afghanistan. Obviously, this is an important time for the country. As you're aware, the US has been talking to the Taliban bilaterally and has some sort of deal there. Some are uncomfortable about this, including, it seems, some in the Afghan government. Given this is a subject, Afghanistan, on the Security Council agenda, that Afghanistan is mentioned in numerous resolutions, the Taliban is mentioned in numerous resolutions, is it time for this to move from a bilateral process for the Security Council to have some involvement in what is going on in Afghanistan? And in your national capacity, what does Russia make of the whatever we know of the interim deal between the US and Afghanistan? And can you perhaps expand on comments out of Moscow a few days ago that Russia's ready to act as a guarantor for the peace deal?
First question was on UN Security Council involvement on Afghanistan. And I think that Security Council is involved on Afghanistan since it regularly discusses the issue in the Security Council. One of the meetings will be held on September the 10th, and one way or the other, the situation around Afghanistan, and including talks between US and Taliban, will be a subject of consideration. We have consultations with the United States on Afghanistan, which are, I think, quite helpful and productive. It's been some time already, and I think that we don't have any double agenda on Afghanistan. We are interested in peaceful settlement in that war-torn country that suffered too long, and we are wishing that Afghani people themselves reach an agreement that will be Afghani-led and Afghani-conducive. And of course, the issue of the withdrawal of foreign troops from Afghanistan is one of the key things at the negotiations between US and Taliban. What will happen after eventual withdrawal, that's also an issue of concern. We know that Afghani forces are being prepared and strengthened to cope with the potential threats that they may encounter. We see that the wave of terrorism in Afghanistan doesn't unfortunately cease. We just had the recent and that these events happen basically every week, if not every day. If you talk about us guaranteeing the agreement, we will guarantee any agreement that will be reached by primarily by Afghanis themselves, so that the country is finally free from the threat of terrorism and on the path of development. We know that Afghanistan experiences influx of terrorists from other areas. This is a country which is not strange to us. It borders and it is bordering with our allies from the same security treaty cooperation organization. And I think that this issue will feature prominently during discussions on terrorism threats with the participation with our, or during our signature event on September 25th with the participation of the Secretary Generals of those regional and sub-regional organizations that I mentioned and countries members of those organizations. And of course Afghanistan is part of that equation in the region, and we want peaceful Afghanistan. We want settlement in Afghanistan. I think Afghanistan deserves it a long time, and whoever reaches the agreement, and if it is good for the people of Afghanistan, we will support it. In what form we will guarantee it, I don't have an answer on it. First, we have to see the agreement in order to be able to define what we can guarantee. But we will welcome the early agreement on the Afghan settlement if that is the case in the near future.
Very quick follow-up. Should a final eventual deal, we might be getting a little ahead of ourselves, should it come back to the council? Should the council have a final role in this?
Not easy to answer that question because we don't know what is the final deal, between whom is the final deal, what format of the final deal. If that is a bilateral deal, I'm not sure that the country that part one, at least one country that is part of that deal, would volunteer to go to the Security Council with that deal. Many unknowns about that thing. Let us come to that later when we know if there is a deal.
Thank you.
Ali Barada, please.
Thank you, Ambassador. In the past few days, we saw rising tensions across the border between Lebanon and Israel, and almost we slipped into another war. My question is, why Russia is not doing anything to prevent the Israeli attacks? Since Russia is controlling a major part of the Syrian airspace, why you're not doing anything to prevent that? And do you think that there are enough miscalculations from all parties to go into another major conflict in the region? Thank you.
Well, I think that after that incident that took place recently, there were statements that at this stage this episode is over. Although there were some follow-up statements that now the hands are free to go if that continues. We very much hope that the stability in Lebanon, which is crucial for the Middle East, is maintained. I don't know how you want us to prevent Israeli attacks, eventual attacks or past attacks that happened on the parts of the Lebanese territory. We do not control the Lebanese airspace, nor are we the guarantors of Lebanese airspace, we don't have any arrangements preventing these things to happen. I'm not sure that we're part of that equation, but you know that the Security Council is looking closely at the issue, and there was a document proposed by some of the colleagues on this episode to stop and refrain from further hostilities. I don't know yet the fate, the destiny of that document, but the Security Council is definitely watching what is happening around Lebanon, both during the regular meetings on the UNIFIL operation and during this extraordinary things that happen, unfortunately, there. But of course, this is an event that does not contribute to the stability in the Middle East, which is unstable without what is happening around Lebanon. The reasons why it happened are being widely discussed and speculated in the press. Who needed it? Why it was needed? What dividends it might have brought, etc. This is all very unfortunate, and of course, can lead to things that happened with Lebanon in the past. But I'm pretty sure that nobody is interested on repeating the unfortunate past that happened between the neighboring countries in 2000s and earlier.
Just a quick follow-up. Because the attacks in Syria are directly connected to the issue of Lebanon, my question is whether Russia is coordinating that with Israel, accepting that, and just ignoring the fact that this is rising attention where the Russian army has a say, and at least in the airspace of Syria, it's connected to the Lebanon thing. And what I'm saying is that might lead to a wider conflict beyond Lebanon, where is Russia standing regarding that very critical issue?
We are not coordinating with Israel its attacks on Lebanon, I can assure you. Whether it may lead to wider conflict, yes, if that flares up, it may add already gasoline to the fire that is raging in the Middle East without it, and we would like to avoid it and prevent any escalation of that conflict. But as I said, there were messages from both sides that neither side wants this escalation, and at least this is positive.
Majid.
Thank you, Theodore. Thank you, Ambassador. Ambassador, I have two questions about Syria. The first one is about an op-ed by Ambassador Jonathan Allen of the UK yesterday for the CNN. He basically says Russian military has cooperated closely with the regime, and their planes have also taken part in the bombing raids, referring to those bombing raids that targeted hospitals in Idlib. Do you have any reaction? And my second question is about something yesterday your foreign minister told a colleague of mine about the safe zone, about the agreement between US and Turkey. He says, we see such a decision as necessary with the condition that it does not negatively impact the Kurdish issue. Can you expand on this? How Russia thinks that implementation of a safe zone can be implemented without impacting the Kurdish issue in Syria? Thank you.
I haven't read the op-ed by Jonathan Allen, but the narrative that obviously is in the op-ed is very, very well known to us. We hear it all the time when we have Security Council meetings, where we are constantly being blamed and accused of indiscriminate bombing and shelling of Idlib. On which we said many times, and we already provided information that first the sources of data are not very convincing to us. We know who provides the data. We know that the data is often unverified. That these are people, sources from the ground, whom United Nations often refused us to provide, citing their security. Then we showed a few times that those accusations of bombing of particular targets that were mentioned were false. So, you know, this narrative is not new, and we hope that with the new data that we are receiving from our Ministry of Defense on particular incidents, on particular targets, particular sites that were allegedly bombed, we would be able to provide information that discredits the accusations. On the safe zone and the statement by the foreign minister, he said, as far as I understand, that he understands the legitimate Turkish security concerns, without affecting the fate of the Kurdish people. I do not see any contradiction here. Of course, Turkey is interested that its territory is not being targeted by terrorist groups, but at the same time, it should not be a reason to ignore the interests of the Kurdish population, which is in the northwest of Syria. I don't see any contradiction in these two statements.
Michel.
Thanks, Ambassador. Michelle Nichols from Reuters.
I know.
Which will be celebrating its 168th birthday next month. Just to let you know. A little bit older than Taff.
Okay, I'm expecting invitation.
I've got a question for you. If we could just look ahead to UNGA at the end of the month, when many, many world leaders gather here in this building. On Iran, what opportunities do you perhaps see during UNGA for opportunities to sort of calm down the situation between Iran and the US? And what is Russia doing to try and save the nuclear deal? We've had this French proposal today, but what's Russia doing? Thanks.
Russia has been trying to save the nuclear deal from the beginning of its the new phase of the nuclear deal that started in May last year. Both us and China, and with the European trio, and with the European Union, we tried to save the deal and to make sure that neither side makes any sudden moves that will bring the situation into the spiral which will not see any way out. We said that we were not particularly happy with what Iran was announcing, although it did not violate the deal itself, as you know, the moves that it made recently. But we understood why Iran was doing, because the deal was a two-way street, whilst one ways of the street was closed, and Iran was left with nothing, basically what it gained from the deal. And besides the deal, it was being very seriously pressed and threatened bilaterally by, you know, which country. And what is happening around Iran is far from easing the tensions, although we witnessed a few positive, not even moments, but hints that something may happen on that Iran track in the near future. But the statements that we hear from both sides are a little bit confusing and contradictory yet. We still have to wait and see. We hope that the UN General Assembly, and especially the high-level week, provides an opportunity for engagement and dialogue. What will happen exactly during that week, I'm not a prophet, I cannot predict, I don't know, but I hope something is cooking. And the very presence of the leaders at the General Assembly and the proximity to each other leaves us an opportunity for certain things to happen. But I wouldn't speculate what exactly will happen during high-level week. At least as on my behalf, as the President of the Security Council, and from what you see, what you saw from my presentation, you saw that there were no meetings scheduled on any related issues during the high-level week, but high-level week is a big place and a big space. We hope that something positive will happen. Let's wait and see.
Thank you, Abdulhamid Sayam from the Arabic Daily, Al-Quds Al-Arabi. Mr. Ambassador, the question of Palestine has been on the agenda of the UN since its inception, and nothing has been implemented on the ground. UN Security Council Resolution GA keeps calling on Israel to halt its settlement activities, latest of this resolution 2334, as you know. Every month there is a report about more settlement activities. UN calls on Israel to halt. All human rights groups, every organization calls on Israel to do something to stop these settlements, yet Israel had never, ever abided by these resolutions. What do you think? What could be done? Why the UN had miserably failed the Palestinians? Is there anything other than appealing to Israel to halt its settlement activities? Thank you very much.
I don't think it's the UN who miserably failed the Palestinians. UN was, for all those decades, a part of not of a solution, because solution never materialized, but part of the process to achieve, to reach solution, part of the quartet, as you know. But what is quartet now, tell me? Basically, not non-existent, but not functioning. We are still being told about this deal of the century that has been the talk of the town for quite a time. Now, the latest thing I heard was that the plan might come out before the new Israeli elections, which are due sometime in October. If 17th September. So we have only two weeks to wait. But somehow I have a gut feeling that it may be delayed for another time and for another reason. Unfortunately, we had a chance after Oslo agreements and things were moving, but then you know what happened, and I don't think that UN particularly is to blame for what is not happening. It is very unfortunate. You know that we strongly support the Palestinian cause. We condemn the Israeli settlement activities, not only us alone, but the whole world, which is confirmed by the numbers on the resolution that was adopted on that issue. I cannot bring you any good news on this issue at the moment, as you know, and it's been for some time already. The next time we will hear about it, about the dire situation that is developing around that conflict, we will hear during the briefing of Nikolai Mladenov. He's been more pessimistic every time I heard him since I arrived, and it's been already 2 years. We've been proposing to re-engage the multilateral approach on that problem a long time, which we consider to be the heart of the whole Middle East issues. In fact, before the Palestinian issue is solved, the Middle East will not be settled. But unfortunately, and I think that our position is basically shared by the European Union on the multilateral approach towards resolving that thing, but it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. I cannot, as I told you, bring you yet any good news on that.
Thank you.
That's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.